Zorn, 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 the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, 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 we sing the praises of Zorn.
Let me tell you something, Wendy. Everybody's complaining about the snow and the weather, too afraid to travel. Not Eric Zorn. He's not afraid of anything. He's not scared.
He's on the phone today.
Oh, he's on the phone. I thought he was here.
I'm on the phone today.
Oh. Forget what I said then. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Eric.
I totally wimped out, man. I got up this morning. I saw that snow. I said, nope, I'm not going in.
It was an instant decision. You looked from your window, from inside. You looked out the window and just went, this is not for me. I can't do this.
Well, I actually did go out to shovel, and I was shoveling, and it was really coming down. So.
Oh, no.
Hey, I heard that you guys have been recording our conversations. Is that true?
I don't know. It's possible. Why?
I just thought we were just talking every week, and now I hear that maybe they've been recorded. I don't know what's on these.
You have nothing to worry about. There's no reason to worry. No reason to worry.
Man.
All right, I want to start out with something pretty serious, and that's the Jason Van Dyke sentencing. You've written about it. You're thinking about it. What's going on there, Eric?
Well, it's really interesting because Attorney General Kwame Raoul is considering an appeal of this sentence that Jason Van Dyke got. And if you remember, it was the 18th of January, that Friday afternoon, and they gave Van Dyke a sentence that will amount to him spending about three more years in prison before he's let go in the shooting death of Laquan McDonald. And people are saying, well, is Raoul overstepping his bounds? What's the basis that he's doing this on? And the answer is sort of interesting, which is that, if you remember, Van Dyke was convicted, this is the police officer, of second-degree murder, and also 16 counts of aggravated battery with a firearm. And so there was this possibility that he was going to serve 96 years in prison or something like that. Well, so the judge gets on the stand, and he says, well, it turns out that second-degree murder, under the law, is a less serious crime than aggravated battery with a firearm. And
it doesn't sound like it would be that way.
It doesn't sound like it would be that way, but it is, and I think it reflects some back in the 80s and this desire we had to really attack gun crime. And so the judge says, this is crazy because this means that if somebody comes at you with a gun and shoots and hits your pinky finger, he called it your baby finger, then that's a more serious crime than if he murders you in the second degree. And second degree murder is what happens, the charge you get when you kill somebody because you're afraid, you think they're posing a threat to you, but they actually don't. That fear is unreasonable. So anyway, he goes, this is clearly absurd. The second degree murder charge is the charge that should apply here, not these aggravated battery with a firearm. Therefore, I'm going to sentence him based on the second-degree murder, which is a lesser charge. It carries a lesser sentence. And he sentenced him on the lower end of that sentencing range. So,
Eric, a question, though. Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
He was tried for both those crimes, for both aggravated battery and second-degree murder, correct?
Yes.
So if he was tried for them and found guilty for them, why wouldn't you be sentenced for them?
Well, he was actually tried for murder, and the second degree is the finding of the jury. They consider first-degree murder, and then they diminish it to second-degree murder. And the answer is that we have a doctrine in the courts here, the rule that you think of is sort of like one crime, one offense, basically, is the idea, which is like, when you can't, like, if you stab somebody six times, that shouldn't be six different crimes. That's one crime. You're stabbing them.
Other people who have been found guilty of various crimes have had to pay for both, right? It's not unprecedented that that's how it plays out, right?
It wouldn't be. You're right. And the thing that's peculiar is that there is this wrinkle in the law. Like, it's kind of crazy that aggravated battery with a firearm is a more serious crime. And it turns out that the Illinois Supreme Court has considered this in a 2004 case out of Springfield, where a guy was convicted. He shot somebody who he thought was threatening him but wasn't. He was sentenced to 20 years for the murder and 15 years served concurrently for the aggravated battery. And the guy appealed to the courts, and he said, well, wait a minute. We've got these two crimes. They're the same for the same incident. I should be sentenced on the second degree murder charge because that is I was sentenced to second degree murder. I should be sentenced on the aggravated battery with a firearm because that is the more serious crime in the legislature. And that's what the court found. The court said in that ruling, and it's called People versus Lee, and Judge Gahan from the bench cited this case, but he cited a dissent in the case. In doing this, the actual opinion says, look, if you've got these two crimes, we've got to look to what the legislature says. And right. The legislature says, whether it makes sense to us or not, the legislature says that the aggravated battery with a firearm is more serious. If Attorney General Raul does pursue this and does get this verdict, the sentence overturned, they would have to sentence him on the aggravated battery with a firearm, which is it carries a 6 to 30 year sentence, and you have to serve 85% of that.
But do they end up retrying the case if that happens?
No, they just review the sentence.
Okay.
And part of this also led me into this other thing that's been bothering me lately, which is that when we report the sentence, if you remember that when the news came out about the sentence, everyone said, you know, he gave him almost 7 years, he gave him 81 months. And in truth, when you sentence someone in second-degree murder, this is one of these crimes for which you get day-for-day good time. It's called good time, you know, where they sentence you to 6 years, you only serve three.
Is good time the right term to use for this? I'm not sure it is.
I don't think it is actually the right term to use. It's kind of the term of art.
Yeah.
Essentially, you get good time credit as long as you don't actively misbehave. It's not like you're in the prison sewing clothes for the poor,
right,
or, you know, teaching literacy classes. You're not doing anything. You're just not breaking more rules.
Yeah. Right.
So my argument would be that when you're sentenced, when you're given a sentence of, in this case, 81 months, that the actual sentence, the time he's going to serve in prison for, you know, pending review, the time he's going to serve in prison for shooting and killing Laquan McDonald is going to be 40 months, 40 and a half months.
You get a discount. You get a time discount, don't you?
For good behavior.
Yeah.
Well, but good behavior just means that you're not actively breaking rules. You know, you're not, and in fact, you know, you may be breaking little rules, but you're not, like, you know, throwing urine at a guard or beating people up or something like that. It doesn't happen all that often that people get their good time taken away.
Yeah,
it's a bit of a carrot and stick, and I understand that they need it, and it's probably fine that they have the option to extend the sentence without going back to a whole new trial. But I think that when we're talking about it in the media, I think it's really important to say that what the sentence, that the time that Jason Van Dyke is going to serve in prison for this crime is going to be 3 years and 4 months, I guess it is. So anyway,
how about that?
All right, I'm on my horse about this.
I can hear the horse. I can hear it. Eric Zorn is here and his horse is here. We'll continue our conversation next. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and we are talking to the Chicago Tribune's Eric Zorn. Hello, Eric.
Hey, Wendy.
Eric, the mayoral race is getting closer and closer in terms of time. What can you tell us? Any updates?
Well, everyone that I've been talking to about this remains undecided. I've talked to a lot of people, and they've got a couple of candidates they like, they're not sure of. I've never felt this in an election like this before. I've never felt like it's so incredibly fluid. You see polls out there. I guess Tony Preckwinkle is slightly up in the recent polls, but it seems really fluid underneath that. And we had a conversation at work the other day. We were sort of going around like, who do you like for mayor? Just give me one name. If you had to vote today. And only one person in this group could just give one name. Everyone said, well, maybe him, maybe her. I mean, everyone wanted to give two names. And so finally we changed the rules and you could give two names because nobody had settled on a name. I mean, you know, it's a tough choice. And my feeling is that it's good because I think there are some really qualified people running. I think this is kind of a little bit of an embarrassment of riches. These are good people who are running, people who are smart, who thought a lot about the issues. But, you know, there are 14 candidates.
Yep.
And the news came out about the fact that not only was Solis wearing a wire, but Alderman Burke has had his phones tapped for the last couple of years. And some of these candidates have had significant interaction with one or both of those men, and we just don't know. It's going to be weird. We may elect a mayor and then find out a couple months from now, and the recordings come out that they're involved in some hinky business with some people. So it's one of these things where, in some ways, we're going to have to take a chance on who we vote for. So it's really a fascinating and very fluid situation. Are you picking that up when you talk to people?
Oh, very much so. And I'm wondering what has to happen from a strategy standpoint if you're one of the candidates, knowing that it's so close, it's so neck and neck with just a couple of weeks to go. Does somebody do something kind of daring? Does somebody jump out in front and do something to get more attention? What do you think?
Well, they might. I mean, no one has really gone strongly negative yet. There've been some attacks, but I think as the field boils down, you sort of realize they're going to be like the top six people, and people are looking for who's going to occupy what lane.
Right.
At some point, you're going to have to knock somebody off their perch. You're going to have to really go on the attack. We haven't seen a whole lot of that yet. We've seen a lot of image boosting. If you look at the ads, and you know, Bill Daley's all over the TV with his ads, but those have been every ad I've seen anyway. From him has been, I love this city, I'm hugging people,
yeah.
I've got all these great plans, I'm going to freeze your taxes and all that. But I haven't heard him say, you know, going after, say, Tony Preckwinkle or Susana Mendoza or Gary Chico or these people who are seem like they might be likely candidates. So it's one of these situations where you are kind of waiting for some news to break or someone to pop through the clutter and really make an impression. But it sort of hasn't happened, and I don't know how clued in people are to all the policy positions. These guys are debating all the time. I'm supposed to moderate a mayoral debate next week. I didn't even know it was happening, and then they reminded me that I had to do it. I was like, okay, it's at a high school up in the Northwest Side. So these guys, these candidates are just all over the place. They're always talking to people, always debating each other.
Yeah.
And so people are still really making up their minds. I actually moderated an aldermanic debate last week, and I asked the aldermanic candidates who are on stage here in the 39th Ward, and I said, who do you like for mayor? And I let them have two names, and they had the same thing. They're like, well, I don't know. And they
really?
And they were like hemming and hawing, and I like this guy, and I like her, but I'm not sure. And these are aldermanic candidates. So you shouldn't feel bad if you haven't made up your mind yet, because even the people who are living and breathing politics every single day are feeling the same way.
Eric, does anybody care about the Susana Mendoza's thing where she the video was leaked that she was running for mayor and she hadn't talked about it, and then lo and behold, she's running for mayor? Does anyone care?
I don't think so. I think that is an old story by now. I think the thing people are more worried about is that, you know, she had a wedding ceremony at the house of Alderman Burke, and that she has been tied to him for many years and has considered him a mentor. She's also fairly tied to Speaker Madigan. I mean, I've always liked Susana. I think she's spunky, and I like the way she took on Bruce Rauner. I think a lot of people have questions about how much of an insider she's going to be, whether she's just going to be, you know, a continuation of the same insider politics. I think that's more the thing that's going to be dogging her at this point.
I'll go on, Derek. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying that, you know, we have the same questions about Tony Preckwinkle.
Yeah.
You know, she stuck by the assessor Joe Berrios when he was really under fire, very unpopular, and people saying, well, you know, if you're such a progressive, why were you sticking by this guy who was overseeing this property tax system that was hurting so many poor people? So people are questioning her bona fides also.
If I could get a refund on my property tax,
vote?
Yeah.
That's how we
is that legal?
Yeah.
Wow.
And also the fact that Wendy doesn't live in Chicago, but still somehow votes for a Chicago mayor. I don't know how she does it, but she does it.
That's how it works. That's
yep.
how it all works.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's one of the situations where I think every week it's new, and people are up or down in individual sentiments. So it's a really interesting time.
Let me get in a quick national question. The government shutdown is coming to an end. However, people are wondering if it's just a temporary halt, if we're going to have another one in the middle of February. What do you think? Will we or won't we?
No, we will not have another shutdown. I guarantee that. Trump is not that dumb. This shutdown was disastrous for him politically, and his everything was falling apart on that. That's not going to happen. He may, however, declare a state of emergency,
right?
Which, you know, it's one of the most slow rolling emergencies I've ever seen.
And what would that do then?
Well, he would be able to use military funds to to and other funds. You'd be able to free them up to address this the situation the same way, to build a wall, the same way that you could, you know, when there is an actual emergency, like a hurricane rips through New Orleans or Houston, you could also devote emergency resources to that. You don't have to go to Congress and pass a bill. The problem that you have with that is that if that's your definition of an emergency, which is this long-standing problem on the border that they want to address, and he's not getting his way, you could use the emergency declaration to deal with health care or climate change or gun legislation, anything. So it's something that a lot of people have been warning Trump, including conservative Republicans, about doing this, because once you set the precedent that you know, the president of the United States can declare an emergency because he can't get his way politically, it's very dangerous. But I think that's what he's setting up for in 3 weeks.
Interesting.
Oh, it's not interesting.
It's interesting.
It's terrible.
I didn't say good or bad interesting, just interesting.
I guess.
It's very interesting.
Yeah. Eric, stay home. Do not come in today.
I will come in next week, though.
Come in next
week. I promise.
All right.
We'll be at home next week. We should just do that to mess with him.
I'll have the best tweets of January next month.
Okay.
Excellent.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Eric.
Thanks,
Eric Zorn, everybody. A quick break and then more show coming up, The Stories That Matter, with Ryan Burrow from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio.